Okay, so let's dive into something I think pretty interesting. Imagine like a waiter, tacking on a couple extra bucks to your bill, for a drink you never even had.
Oh, yeah.
Annoying, right? But like, does that qualify as aggravated identity theft? I mean, that's the surprisingly tricky question that the Supreme Court had to deal with in the Dubin v. United States case. And the outcome, I think, has, a lot of lawyers buzzing.
It really does. I mean, this case goes right to the heart of, how we define identity theft, especially in like financial fraud cases. And the stakes are really high here. We're talking about a federal statute that has a mandatory minimum 2-year prison sentence.
So to really understand like the impact of Dubin, we kind of need to unpack the case itself. So David Dubin, he was part of his father's company, and they provided psychological services. They billed Medicaid. Seems pretty standard, right?
Yeah, it does. But the company, they made some billing errors. Specifically, they were, misrepresenting things like provider qualifications, the actual time spent on services, things like that. But the key here is that they used a real patient's Medicaid ID. They didn't steal one, they didn't make one up.
So not your typical like steal someone's identity and drain their bank account scenario. That's where things get kind of murky.
Yeah, definitely. So the lower courts, they saw the use of the patient's Medicaid ID in this fraudulent billing scheme and said, yeah, that's aggravated identity theft. But Dubin, he appealed it, and the case went all the way up to the Supreme Court.
And the Supreme Court decided to hear this case because the lower courts were all over the place with like how to apply this law,
That's
right?
exactly right.
Like, is it enough to just like use an ID when you're committing fraud? Or does there have to be something more going on?
Does it have to be more than that? And the Supreme Court actually overturned Dubin's conviction, with Justice Sotomayor really emphasizing this idea of the crux of the fraud.
Okay, crux. That sounds important. Break that down for us a little bit.
Sure. So essentially what the court said was to be guilty of aggravated identity theft, the misuse of that ID has to be at the core of the crime. It can't just be like a side element. They used examples like, a lawyer padding their billable hours or a waiter overcharging you on your bill. If they happen to use your credit card info to do it, does that automatically make it aggravated identity theft? Most people would probably say no.
No, probably not. I mean, so it's not enough to just use someone's ID during a fraud. It has to be like about the ID itself, right?
That's it. You got it. In those examples, like the real crime is overbilling, right? It's not stealing someone's identity. And the court saw Dubin's case the same way. The fraud was about, inflating the value of the services, not about the patient's ID itself. The Medicaid ID was just like a normal part of the billing process.
Yeah, I see where they're going with this. So it seems like they're really trying to draw this line between just like using an ID during a fraud and it actually being central to the scheme.
And Justice Sotomayor actually wrote in the opinion, she said, the patient's ID was an ancillary feature, not the core of the fraud. It's kind of like saying the pen a forger used is the heart of the crime, not the forged signature itself, you know.
That's a great analogy. So does this mean now I can like cheat on my taxes and claim it's not identity theft because I use my own social security number?
Well, not quite. The Dubin case, it really focuses on these situations where the fraud is about something else entirely, and the ID is, just a tool that's used in the process. So, like in your tax example, the fraud is tied directly to your social security number, right? So that makes it much more central to the actual crime.
So the Dubin case is a little more nuanced than it seems at first glance. It seems like there's still a lot of like debate as to like where that line is.
For sure. And to make things even more interesting, Justice Gorsuch, while he agreed with the outcome of the case, he wrote a separate opinion that, kind of throws a wrench in the works.
What did Justice Gorsuch have to say?
Well, he agreed that Dubin shouldn't have been convicted under this specific law, but he argued that this whole crux test that the court came up with is still way too vague. He went so far as to call the law a Rorschach test, open to interpretation and potential abuse.
So even though the court agreed on like the outcome of the case, there's still like are some concerns about whether the law itself is clear enough.
Gorsuch is worried that the law as it's currently written could lead to these like inconsistent applications
Yeah.
and potentially unfair prosecutions.
Right.
You know, he seems to be suggesting that Congress needs to step in and clarify some things.
Wow. So the Toobin decision is raising a whole bunch of new questions about how we define and prosecute identity theft, especially in the, you know, these more complex financial fraud cases.
It really is. And it highlights, you know, the need for lawmakers to really think carefully about how they're crafting these laws.
Right.
Especially given, you know, technology is changing so rapidly.
Right.
And the ways that identity can be used and misused are becoming more and more complex.
It's a lot to unpack.
It is.
So before we, you know, move on to part two,
right,
what are some of the key takeaways that you think our listeners should be focusing on here?
I think the main thing is Toobin sets a higher bar for prosecutors to prove aggravated identity theft.
Okay.
The misuse of an ID can't just be a coincidence.
Yeah.
It really has to be the driving force of the fraud.
Okay.
But, you know, Gorsuch's critique reminds us that this crux test might not be the final word.
Got it. We'll be back in part two to dig a little deeper into, you know, some hypothetical situations and explore the broader implications of the Toobin decision.
Sounds good.
Don't go anywhere.
And, you know, as we start to look at some, you know, practical examples here, it's clear that, you know, Toobin has really changed how we think about identity theft, especially as technology keeps, you know, developing and changing.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, what other situations could fall into this gray area? I mean, we use IDs for everything these days.
Oh, yeah.
Online shopping,
yeah.
Renting a car, I mean, even checking into a hotel.
Right. It's a great point. Imagine someone using their real ID to rent a car, right?
Okay.
But then they like intentionally damage the car and then try to like claim it was an accident.
Oh, wow.
That's fraud for sure.
Right.
But is it aggravated identity theft under Toobin?
I mean, it feels like the fraud there is about the insurance scam, right?
Yeah.
Not really about stealing someone's identity.
Right.
The ID is just part of like the rental process.
Exactly. The focus there would be on the damaged car and the attempted insurance fraud.
Yeah.
Not the fact that they use their real ID to actually rent the car.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Okay. What about, what if someone uses their real ID to create like a fake social media account?
Okay.
But they do it specifically to like spread misinformation or harass someone.
Mm-hmm.
Does Toobin cover that?
That's where it gets really, really interesting. I mean, Toobin forces us to reconsider like what identity even means in the digital age.
Yeah.
I mean, are we just talking about these, you know, physical IDs, or are we also talking about our online personas?
Right.
Which can be, you know, totally detached from any official document.
Right, right. It's like the whole concept of identity is like changing.
Yeah.
And the law is kind of struggling to keep up.
For sure.
I mean, this ruling could really impact how we think about online impersonation and fraud going forward.
I think you're right. Toobin might be like the first domino to fall here, you know?
Yeah.
As technology continues to change, I think we're going to see more and more legal challenges over, you know, how to define and protect identity in this digital world.
So for like lawyers who are, you know, kind of navigating this new legal landscape that's shaped by Toobin, what should they be thinking about? Like any advice for them?
Well, I think first, don't jump to conclusions.
Okay.
Just because an ID was used in some sort of fraudulent scheme doesn't mean it's automatically aggravated identity theft.
Right.
Lawyers need to really like look at the facts of each case and determine, you know, was the ID misuse really the core of the crime?
So it sounds like, you know, a lot of the legal strategy is going to depend on whether the ID was used to misrepresent the who, like the person themselves, or the like the what and the when of the fraudulent activity.
That's a great point. You hit the nail on the head. And and second, I think, remember Gorsuch's warning about the, you know, the crux test being too vague.
Right.
This vagueness could lead to some inconsistent applications of the law, which would make it really difficult for both prosecutors and defense attorneys to know like where they stand.
Right. So while Toobin does give us some clarity in this area, it also kind of opens up like a Pandora's box of new questions.
It definitely does. It throws a curveball.
It does.
And it's a good reminder that even these seemingly straightforward legal concepts can get incredibly complicated, especially when you factor in, you know, technology and the evolving nature of identity itself.
Yeah, it makes you realize we're not just like interpreting the law anymore. Mm-hmm. We're kind of actively shaping it as we're trying to deal with all these new challenges.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
So, you know, it's fascinating how a case that's seemingly about healthcare billing
right
has led us to this conversation about the future identity.
It's true.
I mean, it's a reminder that even in a world that's so dominated by technology, that these like fundamental legal concepts are like constantly changing and evolving.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this area of law so exciting.
Right.
You know, Bibin throws down a challenge. How do we adapt our legal systems to make sure there's justice and fairness in a world where identity itself is kind of in flux?
Yeah, that's a big question, but it's one that we need to answer.
We do.
And who knows, maybe the solution will come from one of our listeners.
I hope so.
You know, the legal minds of tomorrow.
That's what we're hoping for.
So for now, I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about.
I think so.
This Dubin case, while it seems like it's just about healthcare fraud, it really takes us down this rabbit hole of questions about like identity.
Oh, yeah.
Technology, the future of like legal interpretation.
For sure.
It's been a fascinating conversation.
It has. And I'm really curious to hear what our listeners think about all this, you know, and what questions do they have as we, you know, navigate this new landscape of identity theft in the digital age?
That's a great question. Let's explore that in part three.
Let's do it.
Stay tuned, folks. This whole conversation about Dubin has really got me thinking about, you know, like identity itself.
Yeah.
Like something we take for granted.
Right. It's true.
I mean, we think about our identity as this fixed thing, but Dubin shows how like fluid and complex it can actually be.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in our increasingly digital world, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. We've got our physical identities, right? Like our driver's licenses, our social security numbers.
Yeah.
But then we have all these online personas, sometimes even multiple.
Right.
That might not even use our real names.
Exactly. And those online identities, they can have real world consequences, right? Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, look at all the cases of online impersonation, catfishing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, those can cause some serious damage, both emotionally and financially.
Right.
And Dubin raises some, like, really interesting questions about how we protect those online identities, too.
Feels like we need, like, a whole new legal playbook to deal with this concept of identity, like, as it evolves.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
I mean, laws that were written with, like, physical documents in mind might not really work when we're talking about, you know, the nuances of our digital lives.
That's a great point. Yeah. Like, how do we apply laws that were designed to, you know, protect social security numbers to situations where someone's, you know, online persona is like hijacked or manipulated?
Exactly.
That's what Dubin's making us think about.
Yeah. So what can we do? Are we just at the mercy of technology and like hoping the law catches up?
I don't think so necessarily. While, you know, legal changes are definitely needed, I think we can also take steps to protect ourselves, you know? It's really about being more mindful of our digital footprint.
Right.
Just thinking more carefully about, you know, what we share online.
Right.
And being wary of, you know, anyone who seems a little too interested in our personal data.
Yeah, it's almost like we all need to become, like, digital detectives or something.
Yeah, kind of.
Like scrutinizing all our online interactions.
Yeah.
And making sure we're not, you know, leaving ourselves vulnerable.
Absolutely. And if something feels off, I think, you know, don't hesitate to report it.
Right.
I think it's important to remember that we can't just rely on, you know, the law or technology to protect us.
Yeah.
We also have a responsibility to safeguard our own identities too, you know?
It's fascinating how a case that, you know, seemed to be about healthcare billing.
I know, right?
Has really brought us to this whole other conversation about like the future of identity.
It really is.
I mean, it's a good reminder that even in this world where technology is like everything, these like fundamental legal concepts are always like changing and evolving.
Yeah, they really are. And that's what makes it so fascinating to, you know, to work in this area.
Right.
You know, I mean, Dubin throws down a challenge for us, you know. How do we adapt our legal frameworks to make sure there's justice and fairness in a world where, you know, identity is changing so much?
That's a big question.
It is.
But it's one we need the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And who knows? Maybe the solution will come from one of our listeners, you know?
I hope so.
Legal minds of the future.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this deep dive into Dubin v. United States has been quite a ride.
It has.
From like billing errors to the very essence of identity.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's clear that this case is going to be impacting us for years to come.
I think so, for sure.
Well, thanks for joining us on this journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And remember, you know, in the world of law, there's always more to uncover, more to debate, and more to learn.
That's the truth.
Thanks for listening.